May God add a blessing to the reading, the hearing, and the doing of this word. So, early in the morning, probably around 4 or 5 o'clock a.m., on July 29th, 1981, I got out of bed at my parents' house, sat down in the family room, and turned on the TV. I tuned in, along with roughly 750 million other people worldwide, to watch the royal wedding. The royal wedding. The wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer. I'd be willing to bet there were a few of you in this room who did that as well. Right? Anybody else? Come on. There were probably many of us who did likewise on April 29th, 2011. To catch Will and Kate's. And how about this past May? Right? Meghan and Harry. All right. You guys, you know what I'm talking about. For a nation that came into being by rejecting a despot king, we seem to have quite a fascination with royalty, and with British royalty in particular. Think of all the TV series that are on now, right? Things that are either on Netflix or on cable. You got The Crown. Anybody watch The Crown? Okay, you got The Crown. There's The Tudors. Rain. There's Victoria on PBS, and Game of Thrones, which of course I know has nothing to do with British royalty or anything like that, but it's my personal favorite, and they all speak with British accents, so I had to throw that in there. In our lack of real royalty here in the U.S., we even fashion our own royalty. The Kennedys were the royal family in politics for a couple of generations. We even called Jack Kennedy's reign in the White House, you guys, right? Elvis was the king. Aretha, the queen of soul. Here's for the younger crowd, Beyonce. Queen Bee. Okay, so why did it take Deborah Kohler? I suppose most of the kids. I knew that one too. Queen Bee is Beyonce. In sports, if I'm allowed to mention King James, even though I know he plays for some team now, who knows? Babe Ruth was a home run king, right? So you get the idea. We love royalty. Now, whether we are watching royalty on TV or the cover of People magazine, whether we're watching royalty in politics or on sports, we all know one thing about royalty. It involves glamour, right? It involves influence. How many, well, some of you are older than I am, but I can tell you I had a shy dye haircut after she came on the scene. It involves influence in style, in clothing, in politics. Royalty involves glamour, influence, wealth, lots of it, and there's always intrigue. Biblical times were not a whole lot different when it came to royalty. Royalty in biblical times always included influence and wealth. King Solomon's temple was reputed for its grandeur. There was also quite a lot of intrigue. David and Bathsheba, for one. King Herod was notoriously corrupt. Pontius Pilate, who was Caesar's appointed governor, was notoriously brutal. So herein lies the irony. Today is what the church calls Christ the King Sunday. It's also called the Reign of Christ. It's the last Sunday of the church year, as I said. It is the crowning glory of the year. Yet with all that we know, all that we have experienced and read about and witnessed about royalty on the one hand, and all that we know about Jesus on the other, however can the two of these, royalty and Jesus, be used in the same sentence, let alone in the same thought or on the same Sunday? Is royalty really what Jesus is all about? Clearly, Jesus did not see kingship as part of his work among us, at least not kingship in the manner in which we know it, with glamour and wealth and influence and intrigue. Earlier in John's gospel, in fact, when Jesus fed the crowds with that miraculous feeding of loaves and fishes, the crowds tried to make him a king. They followed him across the lake to make him a king. And he completely and fiercely rejected this notion. And now here he is before Pilate, and he is clear that any kingdom he might have is not from around here. He came to dwell among us to testify to the truth. He was born to testify to the truth, to speak truth to the powers that be. He did not come here to be powerful. He intentionally stayed as far away as possible from any ideas of glamour or wealth or influence. This is why I have always been very uncomfortable with all this Christ the King stuff. All the wealth and the glamour and the intrigue that go along with royalty are the kinds of things that Jesus rejected. It doesn't make sense. So I did some digging. This feast Sunday, as it is called, this feast Sunday in the church year is actually quite exceptional. Unlike all the other church feast Sundays and holidays like Christmas and Advent, Pentecost, this one was entirely invented by the church. The Catholic Church, to be specific. This feast day that we are celebrating is not based on the life of Jesus or any events in the Bible. Pope Pius XI instituted Christ the King Sunday in 1925, when respect for the church was waning and state control of churches seemed to be on the rise. Stalin and Mussolini were names that were in the news when this encyclical was announced. Stalin, a communist dictator. Mussolini, a fascist dictator. Hitler had published Mein Kampf just 6 months earlier. As fascist regimes and fierce nationalisms were growing in Europe, the time was needed to challenge Christians about their loyalties. Who was going to reign in their lives? The leadership of Jesus, without a doubt, stands in stark contrast to leaders like Stalin and Mussolini and Hitler. We all know that it took great courage. In fact, you would be risking your life if you claimed citizenship in the realm of Christ over the realm of Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin. Now, here we sit in the 21st century in the United States. This distinction between earthly powers and the power of Christ is probably not quite so distinct. It's not quite as obvious as it was in 1920s Europe. After all, we live in a democratic republic. We are premised on the idea of one person, one vote. We, unique to all other democratic nations, we have a Bill of Rights intended to guarantee individual rights over the rule of extremists and extremisms. And even though each of us here likely have differing opinions on how our country does or does not live into its founding principles, nonetheless, each of us gathered in this room who claims to be a follower of Jesus must decide who reigns in our life. Just as Pope Pius urged in 1925, each of us today must decide who reigns in our lives. Who rules in your life? Who rules in my life? Who has first claim on our loyalties? And does your life and my life reveal who has first claim on my loyalties? You see, as we sit around arguing, as we like to do these days, whether it should be the Democrats or the Republicans, or Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders who rules in our lives, as we like to debate whose truth to listen to, the gospel according to CNN or the gospel according to Fox News, Jesus is sitting on trial before the ruling powers, having been arrested by religious authorities. And while we debate on Facebook if people should be saying Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, or if politics even has anything to do with being religious, Jesus is speaking the truth to his accusers. My reign is not from this world. My kingdom does not consist of what you see around you. Reign of Christ Sunday is the day that we are challenged to decide whose reign will shape our lives. It's the day that we are called to stop looking for truth, gospel, and salvation in the rulers and the powers of this world, and to start listening to the voice of Jesus. Whoever accepts the truth, whoever belongs to the truth, listens to my voice. And his is not the voice of wealth or glamour or trend-setting influence or political intrigue and power. Jesus's is the voice of hospitality, compassion, forgiveness, and grace. Living in his truth is not a glamorous life. When Jesus is the voice that shapes our lives, we are compelled to come down with him off that mighty throne and walk where he walks and dwell where he dwells in order to shape a world of hospitality and compassion and forgiveness and grace. One of my favorite movie images of kingship comes from a cult classic, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's a long way from royal weddings in St. Paul's Cathedral. But there is one scene that I just kept thinking of as I was writing this sermon because it captures exactly the whole point of Christ the King Sunday. And I'll clean up the language a bit. It takes place in a peasant village. It's the bring out your dead scene. It takes place in a peasant village where everyone is covered in muck and mud of peasant living. And then along comes the king. Who knows, right? Along comes the king and his entourage, shiny, sparkling, clean. And one man says to the other, "Who's that?" "Must be a king," says the other one. "How can you tell?" "He hasn't got muck all over him." Earthly royalty, whatever it is, resists getting covered in muck. Christ, the king, comes off that throne and dwells here among us, gets covered in the muck and the mud of life with us. Because humanity is a messy and muck-filled business. And the one who rules in our lives is there with us through it all, calling us to do the same with one another.